I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics' viral tubing mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective who is on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. If, like me, you get sad when a story comes to a close, never fear. With June's Journey, the thrill is endless, since new chapters are added weekly. And not only can you enjoy the detective adventure, but you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
You're listening to Muses and Stuff. This is the podcast that's all about the dolls. They were the groupies, the wives, the girlfriends, and the muses who played such a huge role in rock and roll history by simply being themselves.
They were sweet, sexy, brave, and powerful. They went after what and who they wanted, and they made no apologies.
We are your hosts, Shanti and Lynx.
Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Shanti.
Hello, Lynxy. How are you doing?
I'm great. I wanted to say congratulations.
Thank you.
Shanti just finished her yogurt. Yogurt?
My yogurt. My yogurt making class. You wouldn't put it past me to probably be into something stupid like that.
That's a shout out to my dad, whose favorite food is yogurt. Aww. I guess anytime I say yo anything, it just comes out yogurt. So that one's for you, Pops. But yes, congratulations on your yoga teacher training.
Thank you. I completed it yesterday. We started in the dead of winter, and it was every weekend for 13 weekends all day long. And it was amazing, and it was ass-kicking.
I know you were just had so much work piled on you, but you powered through, and congratulations. This is something to really celebrate, and I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you to teach me, because I know nothing about yoga.
Oh, it would be my honor and pleasure to teach you and to help you discover.
I think my dad actually also was like all excited about you getting the yoga training done.
Can we just give a shout out to our dads?
I know, they're the best.
Let's just do that, because we both have dads who are incredibly supportive, incredibly loving, who really like our podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I got a text from my dad the other day, and he said, I re-listened to your 5440 interview, and I listened to your Fred Penner interview, and he said, I feel like I'm getting to know you better.
Oh my God, that's the sweetest thing.
I know, and we already know a lot about each other. We're like best friends in a way, because we do spend a lot of time together listening to music, mm-hmm. and just Yeah, like spending really good quality time together. So it was really special to hear that from him.
It's true. I guess this is a side of us that our friends know a little bit more than our parents do.
Yeah.
It's so nice that they're so supportive and excited for us.
Yeah. And for those of you who might not know, my dad has multiple sclerosis. And so we're currently raising some money to go to just raise some awareness and hopefully try to find one day, hopefully sooner rather than later, a cure, because there's currently no cure mm-hmm. for MS. And just it would go towards finding good treatment for people who are currently living with the disease and supporting family members and people who are living with it, with this terrible, terrible disease. So I can link up my donation page if
Absolutely.
People wouldn't mind throwing in a couple dollars. Otherwise, good vibes, love is accepted as well.
That's great. So what have you been up to lately other than the yoga?
Other than yoga, I went to, well, the same night that you went to the Eagles of Death Metal concert, I went to a reception for Long Night with Vishkana. And so he has a show, like a panel show, kind of a talk show that has already aired on Bell Vibe.
Vibe, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have to wait 37 days legally for it to be available on YouTube. Mm. And so he interviewed Denise Donlin on one episode.
Oh,
and I went up for audience participation and sang some terrible karaoke into the mic. And I had accidentally plugged our podcast on his show, and he has not let me forget that. So we went to the reception, and he got pizza for everybody, and this awesome girl named Aaliyah from the Imposter podcast did an interview with him. Her and I met. We realized that we're both from Sudbury, and we're like, holy shit, like, what are the odds that two, like, young women from that went to pretty close, like, the same high schools.
Yeah, doing the same kind
doing
of
the
thing.
Same kind of thing, because it's kind of hard to come out of that town, I mm-hmm. think, and because I don't know, I don't want to shit on Sudbury, but I never really felt as creative as I could be in that
I
town.
Find it interesting that you say it's hard to get out of that town, because though it definitely is, I find that the ones who do, they're like all know each other. And if you know one of them and you're out, like you're automatically connected to all these people you didn't even know were from Sudbury, but are, and everyone is just so happy, like, oh, you made it, you're here.
Yeah, we saw LJP there, Linda.
Oh, yeah.
So shout out to Linda, who was the applause sign girl, and she was in her David Bowie tights on her way to do some stand-up comedy, do an improv
yeah.
show. And so
Linda's the fiercest, most amazing, most hilarious woman I've ever met. I love her so much.
Me too.
And speaking of other fellow dolls, I went to Eagles of Death Metal that night. Unfortunately, everything good always like happens on the same night.
Yeah, so we need to kind of split up, because I had plans on going, and I said I really need to go to this. Mm-hmm. So you go to this, and then we'll just report back.
Yeah. So yeah, I went with Lisa and Ellen, two amazing dolls. Ellen is the most amazing artist. You should check her out. Her Instagram is called Drawing Toronto. I can never get over how brilliant her pieces are, and she loves architecture, and she draws these beautiful historical pieces of Toronto, and definitely check that out. And the show itself was just amazing. Eagles always bring such an energy, and it was so great. Jesse Hughes is just one sexy fella. Mm. And they even played my favorite David Bowie song. They did a cover of it.
What's your favorite David Bowie song?
Moon Age Daydream.
Oh, that's a good one. Everybody would like to introduce you to CK. That was the meow that you just heard.
Yes.
Yeah, so the dolls, yeah, amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's just nice to be here with you sitting again, just discussing things. And we have...
it's been a while.
...an episode for you, because we've been really busy with interviews.
Yeah.
So thanks.
It's been so much fun, but yeah. I've definitely missed just us two chatting about an amazing woman. So I'm excited. I'm excited for this episode.
So who's it gonna be?
So this one is all about Courtney Love. Now, she's definitely someone that you either love or love to hate, I would say. I personally love her. She was definitely one of my role models growing up. She's the first woman I can really remember seeing and being in awe that she was doing like what a man does. You know, you have this idea in your head, I guess, when you're a kid, especially because that's what's being fed to you. Like this rock star image is about the dudes and all that. And just because of the time that I grew up, the early 90s, Courtney was definitely the strongest woman out there in the rock world.
Yep.
And I do remember like being in awe and thinking like, wow, like a woman is doing this, like I can do anything, like if she can do it. And I remember like she always would get such a bad rap and I would think, well, she's just doing what
because the men are doing. I'm sure there were a lot of female rock stars or pop stars at that time. I'm trying to think.
There definitely
were some.
L7, Veruca Salt, Babes in Toyland. I loved all of them as well, but Hole is definitely the most, I guess, mainstream, the one that got played the most.
Yeah, and were we into like kind of girl groups yet, or well, was this just before? Because I'm not really familiar with Courtney Love. I like my friend Laura had put on Live Through This, is that her album, the other day, and I'm like, this is really good, but I've never actually listened to it. So I missed her. I totally missed the Courtney Love train.
I'll let you borrow her CDs.
So okay, sure. So the information that you're going to be giving me today, I don't know any of this.
Oh, fabulous.
I really don't know anything about her story, and I don't know anything about her music, except that I listened to that one album the other day and I was like, this is really good. So I'm trying to think, like,
this was before like Spice Girls and all that. Spice Girls came around in like late 96, 97, I'd say.
Your cat is eyeing the water glass and we've both had such problems with our cats knocking down water onto our computer, onto our electronics, that I think I'm just going to drink this entire glass of water, set it and forget it, because I cannot spend another $200.
It's like he knows. And the last time you were here in that exact spot, he knocked over the water. So
my cat knocked over a glass of water last night onto my laptop charger. And I was like, I can't believe I've let this happen again. At least my laptop was in another area, but I'm just, I mean, I love these guys, but I'm sick of your shit.
I know, they're troublemakers.
Trouble. My mom calls them trouble.
So, yes, Courtney was in the early 90s. She wasn't really part of the Riot Girl scene. That was more like Bikini Kill and those bands, but she was definitely in that era.
What is the Riot Girl scene?
In the late 80s, early 90s, a bunch of amazing feminist women started making zines and
like Pleasant.
Pleasant was like a generation before this, but these women definitely were inspired by Pleasant and those women, absolutely. And yeah, the Riot Girl scene, like Kathleen Hanna, she really kind of brought that into the mainstream with Bikini Kill. And it was just like a feminist movement. You would love it, honestly. I love it. Yeah, a feminist movement in the grunge rock kind of scene. Kathleen Hanna, her whole motto was girls to the front. And she used to call out like macho dudes who were taking center stage at our shows.
They still do that. I was just at a Slow Dive concert the other day. And that's it. It was a guys with broad shoulders taking up a lot of space at the front of the stage.
Yeah, and so Kathleen used to call them out and be like, no, like, I want the girls to the front. And
that's so cool.
Yeah.
Because usually we make it happen, but it's almost like all of the girls at the front need to look at each other and go, we're going to make this happen.
Yeah.
Like, we need to yeah.
There's a really great documentary on her called The Punk Singer, and it talks about Bikini Kill and the whole Riot Girl movement and all that. And funny enough, Kathleen does have a connection with Courtney and Kurt. She was friends with Kurt back in the day, and she actually wrote on his wall.
Facebook wall? Just kidding.
No, a real wall. Kurt smells like Teen Spirit. And she meant the deodorant, Teen Spirit at the time. But he took that smells like Teen Spirit and turned it into...
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And she also had a very unpleasant interaction with Courtney Love once, where Courtney, I think, sucker punched her at a show and like beat her up, and Courtney ended up getting sued for it. So their relationship is a little more strained. But anyway, so let's get into Courtney's story. She was born Courtney Harrison in July 9th, 1964, in San Francisco, I believe. Her dad was actually a roadie for the Grateful Dead.
Cool.
Yeah. Her mother, I don't think when she was born, but as Courtney grew up, her mother became a psychologist.
I'm just going to give a shout out to my favorite roadie of all time, Daryl. Daryl, I love you. You're the best.
Roadies are the best.
Yeah.
So Courtney, her parents split when she was five in 1969. She moved to Oregon and then to New Zealand and then back and forth. And she, like Kurt Cobain, actually had an upbringing where it was like both parents kept shuffling her off to the back and forth. Mm-hmm. They didn't really, I guess, want to take care of her that much.
Damn.
Yeah. At 14, she ended up going to reform school because she was caught shoplifting. And then I think she went into foster care for a short while. She ended up emancipated when she was 16. She finally got out of there. That's when she sort of started getting into the rock and roll scene. She started also working as a stripper around this time, and I think that's where the love in Courtney Love, when she started using that as her surname. I know she also spent a short time in Ireland because her dad moved there for a while. She has strained relations with her parents. I don't think her and her father have spoken in years. Her father has actually written a couple books about her.
Oh.
One sort of alluding to the fact that it's possible that she did murder Kurt.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So you can understand why she doesn't really feel the need to spend time with her father.
No.
So
do you think that was kind of for like exploitive reasons, like he wanted that?
Yeah.
was a cash grab kind
yeah,
of thing.
Absolutely. And he actually has also been in documentaries talking about her and, you know, what a crazy child she was and how he's not surprised all this has happened and things like that. He's definitely taken advantage. I think her mother might have actually written something too. I'm not really positive, but
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. A picture is being painted here.
You know,
some
people have ideas
starting to make sense.
People have ideas of Courtney. Like, she didn't come from an easy background.
Yeah.
There's reasons why everyone are the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it was around this time that she began trying to figure out if she wanted to go the rock and roll route or if the film route. And in 1985, she actually tried out to play Nancy in the film Sid and Nancy.
Oh, wow.
She didn't get that part, but she did get a minor role in the film. Then she lived in New York for a while. She was a stripper there. Alex Cox, the man who directed Sid and Nancy, ended up using Courtney in his next film, Straight to Hell, which also stars amazing people like Joe Strummer and Grace Jones.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah. She also, while in New York, did something with Warhol, and she's in the Ramones 1988 video for I Want to Be Sedated.
Mm.
Anyone, it's a crowded video, so anyone who is wondering which part she is, she's the bride, and you'll be able to spot her. But she wasn't really happy in the film scene, so she ended up going to Alaska. She said that she needed to get her shit together and learn how to work, and she went on this quest. And she worked as a stripper there as well. And apparently the quest did work because she realized music was definitely the route that she wanted to go.
You know what? I think I just need to go to Alaska and get my shit together. Yeah. If I just disappear for a couple weeks at a time, just tell everybody that Shanti's in Alaska getting her shit together.
While stripping?
Sure.
Possibly.
Yeah, I have to find a cool, like, exotic dancer name, yeah. But after that, I'll be good to go.
All right. So I think around this time, she also started, like, playing guitar, and she, for a very small time, was in a band with Kat Bjelland and Jennifer Finch, both of whom ended up in separate bands from the, like, Riot Girl movement, Babes in Toyland and L7, both of which are amazing. I got to see them live last year. Yeah, I think it was last year or the year before.
Awesome. In Toronto.
Yeah, they were awesome. I grew up also admiring those women, so and both had sort of stopped playing for a long time, so I never thought I would actually get to see them live. It was great. So now we're at around 1989, I would say.
I was a solid 1 year old.
Yes. She actually married a man named James Moreland, but they got annulled. It got annulled 3 months later. And she also started having an affair with Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins.
He was probably really hot, right? At like 1989?
Yeah, he still had hair then. There's a great video actually of Courtney.
Not that bald isn't sexy. No. Bald is sexy.
Just commenting that he had hair because of this story I'm going to say.
Oh, okay.
I think it was an Unplugged set at MTV. You can find it online, I'm positive. She introduced one of her songs saying, like, I wrote this about a boy who did me wrong or something. And then she was like, but I cursed him and he's going bald now. And so, you know, that one's about Billy.
All right.
So, yes, 1989 is also the year that Hole played their first song as a band. And by 91, they had recorded their first album called Pretty on the Inside. Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth actually produced it.
Cool.
It's a lot more rough than the later Hole albums. They became more polished. I still like it, but it's definitely not to everyone's taste.
It's a pretty interesting band name.
Hole?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, instead of just going by, like, Courtney Love, going by a band name, the band name being Hole.
I think she said that she definitely didn't want to be a solo artist. She really did want that band dynamic. And I think the name Hole came from something her mother once said to her, something about having a hole. Or filling the hole or something like...
Yeah, it could go a lot of ways.
So, yeah, she's dating Corgan. And she's still with Corgan when she meets Kurt for the first time. That's in 1991, in May. They met at a Butthole Surfers gig in L.A. Apparently, she already knew who he was, of course, and had a big crush on him. And apparently... when they met, they wrestled, like, really rough, like, on the ground, like, actually fighting. And Courtney said later that it was a mating ritual for dysfunctional people.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Although, that reminds me of when I was in high school. Yeah. So let's talk about Sudbury again. So I... didn't spend a lot of time there. I'd always go back to, like, I live from the small town outside of Sudbury where I grew up, and I went to elementary school in Lively, and I had brothers. I still have brothers, but it was just very much, I was surrounded by boys all of the time. There's just seemed to be more boys up in Northern Ontario. So if anybody is like, where are the men at? Go there. That's where they are. And there is this one friend of mine named Jordy. And that's what we would always do at parties. We'd somehow end up out on the lawn wrestling. Mm-hmm. And it was probably some weird kind of...
I actually remember like wrestling as a kid as well with the boys sometimes. This is like before puberty. It's not... It was never like a sexual thing. By the time puberty hit, I was not wrestling.
Yeah, no, we definitely...
that was your way of... that was foreplay in Sudbury?
I guess so. No, it always stayed, like, pretty innocent with him. It was kind of nice how it just stayed that way. Like, it was a kind of weird opportunity to touch each other. Because he was always kind of with somebody. Either it was, it was probably unofficial at that time, but she always kind of kept an eye out for me. And they're married now, doing some really incredible things together. They've got a Winnebago, and they've got a beautiful dog and cat, and they're both sexy as hell. And it took a few years, but finally she was like, okay, you guys are just friends, and she let her guard down a little bit, and now we're all friends, which is really
nice. That's always great.
It was a kind of a high school thing, though, where she kind of had her eyes on him and was like, this guy is going to be mine, so stay away from him. And I like respect.
Yeah,
like, he's
for
a
sure.
beautiful, smart and guy, and they're having, but anyways, we had a good time wrestling.
Cool.
And that was pretty much just it.
Well, after their wrestling match, they did not begin dating right away, even though Love was like extremely smitten with him. Kurt was recording Nevermind, which we all know blew up and became that's really what shot them to number one. They were flirted at other events, but there was one incident, I believe, where Kurt left with two other girls, mm-hmm. and Courtney had like a fit and got really upset about it. But Courtney is also still kind of with Corgan, I would say, at this time.
How old were they?
Courtney's a few years older than Kurt, so
it's 91
and she was born in 64.
You do the math, people.
Like around 27.
Okay, so they're a bit older than I assumed that they would be at this point.
I would say Kurt was probably like 24, maybe. I'm not positive. I don't know when he was born. But he was not really looking for anything serious because he was so focused on his music and everything. And Nirvana ended up...
Heard that one before.
I gotta stay focused on my music.
You can't be my number one right now.
So Nirvana began...
So if you're okay with being my number two, then I guess we can make this work.
They began a headline tour, and Courtney heard... through the grapevine, through the rock and roll grapevine, that Kurt had been asking about her. So she ended up tracking them down. They were in Chicago. She flew to Chicago. Apparently, their first night together, Kurt tried on all the lingerie that Courtney had brought to seduce him with. And Kurt,
love when that happens.
Kurt and Dave Grohl were sharing a room, and Dave was like kicked out of the room and had to sleep with the sound guy because Kurt and Courtney were having their moment together. And pretty much after that, they were a couple. And it wasn't soon after that they ended up getting kind of like a junkie couple, like a new Sid and Nancy. When Nirvana and Hole were off tour, the pair ended up getting a place in LA, and they settled into that whole junkie atmosphere. It's there that Courtney ended up getting pregnant. Now, she was doing heroin when she got pregnant. She says after she found out, she went to the doctor. It was the first trimester. She was told, if you get clean, your baby will be fine. So that's what she did. The pair ended up getting married in Waikiki, in Hawaii, on February 24th, 1992. If you look at the photos, Kurt is wearing his pajamas. So it was a little like lax on formalities, but beautiful. Got married on the beach. And that August 18th, 1993, Francis was born.
FB.
Yes, Francis Bean. And when Francis was born, they moved to Seattle. Now, around this time, a Vanity Fair article came out by Lynn Hirschberg, I believe it is, talking about, she got quotes from anonymous sources that the scene in their home was very ugly, needles, junkie, this, that. That Courtney had been doing heroin her entire pregnancy. It was such a big deal that Child Protective Services came in once Frances Bean was born to make sure they were fit to be parents. After a big battle with that, they got custody of her. But that really upset Kurt especially, and that sort of drove him deeper into his depression and heroin use.
So I haven't seen any of the
montage of
him. Yeah, so I haven't seen that. I don't know a whole lot about him. I'm sorry. But was he like manic depressive? Was he, mental health wise?
Yeah.
What was going on there?
I don't think he was ever like fully diagnosed. He definitely was depressive, though. I don't
like
think
got famous
any...
didn't like the fame. I don't
yeah.
know, like, it just, that's the vibe that I get.
He actually talks about attempting suicide before, like as a teenager as well. Mm-hmm. So Courtney had a childhood that was perfect until his parents split, and then it was being shuffled back and forth, never feeling truly loved by each. I think her mother had like a whole new family, and so did his dad. So suddenly he had step siblings, and he really got kind of pushed out, and that really affected him. He also says that he had really bad stomach pains, and he's used that as an excuse for why he shot heroin, because he says that that's the only thing that relieved the pain in his stomach.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have nice vape oils with low THC and high CBD.
It's an interesting thing because...
maybe that would have helped him.
It's never really been confirmed that he definitely did have stomach ailments. And some people say that he didn't. And that was his excuse.
Well, what the fuck do they know?
Exactly. Like
you can't imagine being in that position being in the spotlight like that. Like, that's,
also,
of course, like stomach stress.
Absolutely.
And
if you look at his artwork, a lot of his pieces are like very much body parts. And he definitely has pieces that are like guts and intestines, and that was a
he
focus
some
for him.
Third chakra work.
Yeah,
sounds like.
So yeah, he's struggling. In October 93, Hole recorded "Live Through This."
Cool.
Now, on March 3rd, 1994, while they were in Rome, Kurt Cobain took an overdose. Love said that he took 50 Rohypnols, and he ended up in a coma for a while. He had to go to the hospital. They had to pump his stomach. Love has said that this was a definite suicide attempt. Nirvana's publicists have said it isn't. So have all the conspiracy theorists about the Kurt and Courtney thing. But Courtney said that he did leave a suicide note, and his publicists and stuff confirmed that he did leave a note. So, I mean, that sounds like an attempted suicide.
Point two.
And of course, 1 month later, on April 5th, that's when Kurt committed suicide in Seattle. So we know that was, well, some of us know that was a suicide. Others think that Courtney had something to do with that.
Mm-hmm. And it was in their home.
Yes. And they had like a little garage area. It wasn't like in the main house. It was in like a side house sort of thing. That's been demolished.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm sure people would be like showing up there all the time, like Jim Morrison's gravesite or something.
There are other places in Aberdeen where he grew up that have sort of become memorials to him. He has a song about living underneath a bridge, and that bridge passage is a go-to for Nirvana fans.
I said that like I haven't listened to like either of them, but actually I in high school I went through a phase where I did listen to the Unplugged album that had.
That's a wonderful.
Depressing.
Oh yeah. And again, like it's, I don't know how anyone can claim that Kurt wasn't depressive or suicidal, or I mean, there's, all you have to do is listen to his music. It's definitely there. You feel he's going through something, you know. But back to Courtney. Unfortunately, Kurt committed suicide April 5th, and just like a couple of days later, Live Through This was scheduled to be released.
Oh, shit.
So that came out like right on the heels of his death.
Now, the question is, I'm wondering, was this good for her album or was it detrimental? Did people
I would
eat
say
it up? And,
it was good.
Interesting.
It definitely
helped sales.
Yes. And I would say she definitely utilized it too.
Oh.
It's a fitting title, though the title had been picked long before the incident. In June, just 3 months later, their bass player, Hole's bass player, she ended up dying of an overdose as well.
Oh.
So it was just one on top of the other. And Kristen was replaced with Melissa Oftemar, who's Canadian, I believe.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So they ended up doing a world tour that fall for like over a year. Courtney really poured her energy into that. And she said since that focusing on work definitely like saved her.
Sure. And who's taking care of FB at this time?
Courtney.
Okay.
And a nanny, I assume.
Okay.
And so that was like 94. And after the world tour, I would say around 1996, Courtney started getting back into acting. And she ended up doing a couple films from like 96 to 2000-ish. Basquiat, 200 Cigarettes, Man on the Moon, People versus Larry Flint. And with that one, she ended up actually being nominated for a Golden Globe.
Right.
And that film really helped her because Milos Forman, the director, he insisted that she go to rehab and remain clean for the entire shoot. And he had her take urine tests and everything throughout the entire thing to prove it.
Nice.
So she really cleaned up her act then. And from 1996 to 1999, she dated Edward Norton.
Oh.
Right? Very random. I love Edward Norton.
Yeah, me too.
1998, Celebrity Skin came out. That was like a huge album for them. That was probably considered their greatest success. Great album. From 2003 to 2007... those were very bad years for Courtney.
So in 10 years, over 10 years, there's been two albums.
From 91 to 2000 or to 1998, they put out three albums.
Oh, okay. Because we talked about Live Through This and then
Pretty on the Inside.
Yep.
And Celebrities.
Okay, got it.
So they ended up breaking up after that. Melissa Oftemar did her own thing. Oh, I should mention also, on Celebrity Skin, Billy Corgan co-wrote about 5 songs on that album with her. So they're still sort of on-off friends. They also have a love-hate thing. She has that with a lot of people. 2003 to 2007 were not the best years. She ended up doing a solo album called America's Sweetheart that didn't really do so well. And she started getting back into drugs. And
is this when she's kind of like showing up drunk on panel shows and stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a really bad David Letterman thing. I think she actually said she was on crack on that.
Oh, God.
David Letterman. You can tell she's messed up on something. She had some bizarre Howard Stern moments, and it was not good. She ended up getting arrested a few times for drug-related offenses and was sentenced to 6 months lockdown rehab. And she got clean, and she said that she's been clean ever since.
Okay.
So I think that was 2007. So
cool.
It's been a while for her. In 2010, Hole put out another album, I think. That sounds about right. That was their last one. They haven't put out anything since, but Courtney still tours as Hole. Recently, she's been touring with Lana Del Rey.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know Lana Del Rey is also friends with Josh Tillman and Emma Tillman of Father John
Misty. He's in one of her videos.
Yeah, there's some stuff going on there. And
she's an interesting artist.
Yeah, Courtney Love's been on a couple of podcasts.
And yes, I was going to say she also acts in the theater still, and she still does TV. She's recently been in Empire, Revenge, Sons of Anarchy, and she's been doing films again too. So
cool.
Yeah. And
it makes me happy.
Yes. In 2009, when she was still kind of just getting out of that drug era, she ended up losing custody of Frances Bean. There was a restraining order put on her. Frances became into the care of Kurt's mother and sister. But time has sort of been helping to repair her relationship with her daughter.
Yeah, I saw a picture of them online a couple days ago,
both of them post photos of hanging out with each other and stuff, so it's nice to see that's definitely been on track. And in 2015, Frances Bean helped produce Montage of Heck, the Brett Morgan documentary on Kurt. Anyone who's interested in seeing firsthand what Kurt and Courtney's relationship was like, there's lots of home video in that. Some's very hard to watch, but you get an idea.
I want to see it.
It's good. Yeah. And Courtney is an advocate for stricter gun laws, for LGBT rights. She's a feminist. She endorsed Hillary.
Good.
So, yeah, she's been really great. So that's sort of Kurt and Courtney's story and Courtney. But the amazing thing about Courtney is she's not only a musician herself, and she's not only a muse to people like me, and but she's been a muse to many other people. I feel like if there were a crown for a person with the most songs written about them, Courtney would certainly be a strong contender.
Man, what do you call it when... She's like full of perseverance.
Yeah.
Like, she just kept going.
Yeah.
Like...
And so many people talk shit about her, and she gets such a bad rap. And like, she, I was reading an article recently, and she said, like, I still get so many drug comments and stuff, but she's been clean for a decade.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's like, come on. I don't know. I would never say anything against anybody who had any kind of substance abuse issue. It goes far beyond
absolutely.
Just like, you made this choice,
and if
you,
they've gotten clean too, that should be all the more celebrated.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be a reason to tear someone down.
Totally.
So I collected a bunch of songs that, for better or worse, Courtney may have inspired. A lot of these people have not come forward to and admitted that it's about her. But if you listen to the lyrics, it's certainly difficult to argue otherwise. So I'm going to start with one that we know is definitely about her and one that you love.
Yay.
So while the two have apparently buried the hatchet, it's no secret that Dave Grohl and Courtney Love have shared a very love-hate relationship. After Kurt's death and many rows in and out of the courtroom, Grohl took his frustrations to paper and penned "I'll Stick Around." The song was released in 1995 on their self-titled debut. Mm-hmm. Fans took lyrics such as, "How could it be I'm the only one who sees your rehearsed insanity?" to be directed toward Love. Grohl himself denied these rumors for years, but finally in 2009, he came clean and admitted that it was about her. It wasn't just the fans that were searching for possible digs, though. Courtney herself in 1999 told Howard Stern she believed the song "Stacked Actors" was also
"Stacked Actors, stacked to the rafters, line up all the bastards, all I want is the truth."
Exactly.
That's a good song.
When Grohl was asked about that one, he said, "I wrote Stacked Actors about everything that is fake and everything that is plastic and glamorous and unreal. So if that pertains to anyone that comes to mind, then there you go." So not confirming it, but saying, hey, if you see a similarity, there you
cry
go.
"When they all die blonde."
The next one, hard to say if it's about her, but there's a Babes in Toyland song called "Bruise Violet." Now, Kat Bjelland denies this song's about Courtney. It's difficult to believe for multiple reasons, though. In the band's early years, Love lived with a member of the group and almost became bass player for Babes in Toyland. Love and Bjelland also share a very similar look. The red lipstick, the blonde, messy hair, the baby doll dresses. Many think Bjelland was angry at Courtney for stealing her look. It also doesn't help that in the music video, it features a Bjelland Love doppelganger. So if it isn't about Courtney, I feel the band certainly cashed in on making people believe it could be.
Okay.
In a Rolling Stone interview in 1995, Bjelland was asked if she thought that the whole song "Violet" was a response to "Bruise Violet." And she said, "No, maybe, I don't know. I like the song Violet. If we can write good songs back and forth like that, then whatever." So, yep. Love has stated that Violet is actually about her relationship with Billy Corgan, though. So that's one song that Corgan
was
in. It's
all subjective, I guess.
Yes. And there you
go. A good song.
Billy Corgan was a muse as well.
Good, you know, good piece of poetry, good. Yeah.
So this next one is a fun one. People probably won't expect it. While doing an interview with 17 magazine, Courtney Love was quoted as saying, "Being famous is just like being in high school, but I'm not interested in being the cheerleader. I'm not interested in being Gwen Stefani. She's the cheerleader. I'm out in the smoker shed." So Gwen wasn't too pleased with this comment, and she stated, "Someone called me a cheerleader negatively, and I've never been a cheerleader. So I was like, okay, fuck you. You want me to be a cheerleader? Well, I will be, and I'll rule the world, and just you watch me." And then she wrote "Holler Back Girl."
Mm. And that was a big song, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was huge. And if you remember in the music video, she's like a band leader and like playing up the high school thing. So she's never said directly, this is about Courtney Love, but look at these quotes. It's pretty
great.
Obvious.
Yeah.
Courtney also claimed that she hooked up with Gwen's ex-husband, the Bush frontman, Gavin Rossdale.
Sexy guy.
She says that she hooked up with him while him and Gwen were still together. And Courtney has also said that she inspired a song for a Bush song, but neither has revealed which one.
I remember listening to Bush X.
Oh God, yeah. I saw them last year too, actually.
Fun.
I saw a whole bunch of 90s bands. It was great. I still love them. So these next three are more inspired by the Kurt Courtney saga as opposed to just Courtney alone. Tori Amos, she penned Professional Widow. The song has lyrics like, "Don't blow those brains out yet, we gotta be big boy."
Ooh.
And Starfucker, Starfucker, just like my daddy.
What?
Yes.
I don't get it.
Well, as I told you, her dad
was a roadie.
But her dad has used Courtney as a way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the song also alludes to heroin addiction. When asked in an interview if it was about Courtney, Tori responded, "Allegedly," and then went on to say, "Courtney has made certain choices just as I have."
Okay.
Again, not denied it, but also not fully confirmed it. In 2001, Scott Weiland penned Too Cool Queenie, which is on the Stone Temple Pilots album Shangri-La-Di-Da. It's clear what Weiland thought of her. The lyrics, "There was this boy, he played in a rock and roll band. He wasn't half bad at saving the world. She said he could do no right, so he took his life. This story is true." Then he repeats the lyrics, "What goes around comes around," and in the final verse says, "This girl, she got real famous, and she made lots of money, and some of his too. But still, she thinks she can do no wrong, just playing those songs, she's all too cool."
Ouch.
Yes. Scott and her, I'm pretty sure, were buddies, though, because Scott is also, unfortunately, a heroin user. He had a past with drug addiction, and I'm pretty sure they were buddies at a time, but apparently not when he penned this one.
Yeah.
Now, the most wickedly harsh one is by Primus. It's called "Coattails of a Dead Man." It's about a man who became famous, then depressed, and then his fame-hungry wife. Let me read some of the lyrics. "One day from the depths of his deep darkened hole, he reached out for something to feel. She offered nothing but lack of respect, so he left himself with two barrels of steel. She cried in the day, she cried in the night, she cried loudest when someone was near. Whether crying for him or she cried for herself, the bigger the camera, the bigger the tear. Most folks agree she was living a hell, and publicly she showed her pain, and never once was there a thought for herself and the ever-growing slices of fortune and fame."
Hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yes. So, some honorable mentions here. Apparently, Tracy Bonham's Kisses is about Courtney. Tracy Bonham has said, "It's about someone who tries too hard to deteriorate in public for our enjoyment."
Interesting.
Yes. And Billy Corgan has never said anything about this, but Courtney herself has claimed that pretty much every song on Siamese Dream, the Smashing Pumpkins album, is about her. And also Bodies and Where Boys Fear to Tread. And she says that Where Boys Fear to Tread is about her and Trent Reznor. She had a thing with him. Apparently Corgan was upset about that. And speaking of Reznor, it's said that his song Starfuckers Inc. is also about Courtney.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Oh my good groupy goodness.
So yeah, she's basically queen of like the unwanted song. I don't think she like appreciates most of these, but to end on a happier note, Nirvana's Heart-Shaped Box was partly inspired by Courtney. And Courtney, well, let me first just say hello to our friends, the Stupid Girls, Allison and Beck. They recently covered the song Malibu, which Courtney partly wrote about Kurt. She says that Kurt always had that dream of leaving the Hollywood junkie scene and let's just drive to Malibu and, you know, live happily ever after. And get clean. And that was like they're kind of heaven.
Yeah.
And yeah, you should check out.
Yeah, they're really cute, really funny, really talented. Hi, girls.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much Courtney's
amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for telling me that. I learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners did too.
Yes, I will make a little playlist for Spotify for those who want to hear all these songs that were mentioned, and I'll throw in a little Nirvana and some Hole in there as well.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you have your notes out in front of you. I saw that you, like when you turned on your computer, I saw two words. You haven't mentioned them, but I want to ask you about what I saw on your screen. Noel Fielding.
Oh, yes.
Hello. I am such a huge Noel Fielding fan. The Mighty Boosh inspired my, like, I had a light bulb wake up moment when I first saw the Mighty Boosh for the first time early on in high school. And I've been in love with this man ever since. What I do know about them is that I think she might have been on as a guest on Nevermind the Buzzcocks, mm-hmm. or they were on some kind of panel show together, but now I'm wondering.
I believe it's said that they had a relationship.
Oh, she's so lucky.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long they were together or anything like that, but they were definitely...
Yeah, there's like pictures of them kissing and cuddling online.
Yeah, they were definitely a thing for a while.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
And I agree. Noel is such a babe.
Yeah.
And so funny.
I'm going to go find him when I'm in England this fall.
Well, you should talk to Allison.
It's like, okay. Like, Allison. Every time I'm like, I shouldn't. And you're like, just talk to Allison. Yeah. Allison.
Yeah, she's coming for you. So, yeah. I love Courtney. I didn't want to get into too deep about the conspiracy theories around her and Kurt, and I think that's at this point is just harmful for their daughter, you know? And it's unnecessary.
Cool.
Courtney has her own amazing story with or without Kurt, so let's just focus on everything she's accomplished and that she's been clean for a decade and she's doing
wonderful.
Really well. Yeah.
A couple of our last episodes have been talking a lot about addiction and recovery. So mm-hmm. happy to hear that she's kind of come
out. It's certainly a reoccurring theme in the rock and roll scene.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Lynx.
Of course.
Alrighty. Well, that's it for us for this episode. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Muses and Stuff Podcast.
And Twitter at Shanti and Lynx.
Yes, please do. We've been a lot more active there these days, and it's mm-hmm. been a lot of fun. You can check out some other podcasts that I was a guest interviewer. If you go to our Twitter and our Instagram, and you can find all the links for that. Some lovely photos of us and our groupies and groupie birthdays, and it's just a whole lot of fun. So come on and join us, and thanks for sticking with us. And if you're a new listener, welcome, and we hope you stick around. I'll stick around.
See ya.
All right, goodbye everybody.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.